was the number of this session? Not that it makes any difference.
I don't recall.
As if we were doing it for a huge round. I don't recall either, but the name of this session is Seeing as Believing. And a sense, and here comes Mel and Hallelujah and one other guy. So, Hallelujah. Okay, we can start now. And since this isn't taking, we can say any damn thing we want. So, I would like to introduce the poets that are going to perform today. Cheryl Bruno from South Carolina. I'm acting as if this is actually working.
Yes.
All right. Just put it out of the way. That would be more interesting. Then we'll rip up the floor and trip on it. So, Cheryl Bruno will be our first performer, and we talked about doing this last year at Sunstone, and that's where when we should have recruited our audience, because I'm sure they would remember it for a year. But anyway, Cheryl will be first. Alex Galliero from UVU, that's the institution in the South, and also further south from Sicily will be the second performer, and I will be last. And Cheryl has done a marvelous PowerPoint presentation to go along with it. Seeing as Believing, take it away, Cheryl.
Thank you. Start with a poem called Stairs. Stairs. I climbed them one by one throughout my life, a weary one. I climbed them when the baby cried. I climbed back down to go outside and pick the toys up off the lawn. Before I knew, the day was gone. I climbed the stairs to get the clothes. Back down to Band-Aid injured toes. Upstairs, clean out all the drawers. Downstairs, then go out of doors to hang the laundry on the line. Sorry, boys, I don't have time. No, wait. There's something in your face. Reminds me of another place. Come and tell me more and more. Please don't lie to the dirty floor. Yes, I know your words are true. Tell me what I have to do. Stairs? I've climbed a billion such. Another step won't hurt too much. I wrote this poem like immediately after I joined the church. I was 19 years old, a 19-year-old convert, and this kind of expressed my faith at the time. And since the theme of the conference is a maturing faith, this is going to show you, my poems are going to show you kind of how my faith has matured along the way. But I will tell you, I had a problem with the word maturing. Right away, I had to redefine the word maturing. I thought there might be a bit more to go with faith. And this poem will show you while I was on my mission, I wrote this poem. It's called Come and Sit Down. Come in and sit down, she said, as she smiled a crooked tooth grimace, plunking her heavy body into an overstuffed chair. I kicked the toys out of my path and gingerly placed myself on a dusty sofa, wondering how I would get the cat hairs off my dress. And then she reached into my mild disdain and told me how she found the truth amid a background of sorrow, and how she clung to it through the storms of adversity. One by one, the fading the dishes. Holes in her clothes, the unswept floor, as all the light in the room seemed to be resting on her face. So, my uncomfortableness with the word maturing, I thought, had to do with the fact that I was connecting it with a maturing faith as a growing faith, a more spiritual faith, but I was assigning value to that word. So I just changed it around a little bit in my head and thought of it as, instead of a maturing faith, I thought of it as awakening faith. So with that word, I could go a lot more places. And I asked as my faith ripened, I became able to accept some of the foibles, some of my my propensities that faith didn't seem to, a Mormon faith didn't seem to really accept. For example, one of them, I'm going to get real personal here, and so I'm sort of glad there's not a huge audience, but one of my propensities I discovered early was to, have these little affairs of the heart, affaires de cœur, and so even on my mission, I was experiencing these, and this is a poem I also wrote on my mission called Forbidden Moment. A forbidden moment came and caught us in its clutches. We briefly touched. Your look seared to my heart. Then you turned and you were gone, and I was left in silence. That moment was enough for love to start. Now the seed in dormant lies. The soil must lie fallow for 6 more months. And who knows what they'll bring? I must put it in a box, unwatered by my teardrops, unplanted by my thoughts until the spring. I'm so dramatic. But as I began to return my faith, I realized that these propensities were okay. I could accept that about myself and still be a valid member of the church. So my next song also is going to show where my faith was in an early stage. And it's called Song of the Vineyard, and I wrote it after Isaiah 5. Now up here, I don't know if you can read those words real well, but up here I have the text from Isaiah 5. And I'm going to read my poem, and you see how closely, as I read my poem, you see how closely I follow the actual text of the Bible. I stay so close to that I just put it in rhyming form. And so here it goes. Just follow, you'll be able to follow on really easily because it's line by line, it just goes. It's called Song of the Vineyard. I will sing a song of the Lord above, of his vineyard and the fruit thereof. My love has a vineyard he watches well. My Lord has a garden and a fruitful hill. He fenced his vineyard all around, and he gathered the stones from out of the ground. And he planted the choicest vine to be found, and he built a tower high on a mound. And he made a winepress, the fruit to be found. He looked for the grapes to be so fine, but the fruit was wild. O men of Judah, judge, I pray. Jerusalem's people, what do you say? What more was there that I could possibly do to make sure the fruit in my vineyard grew? I looked for the grapes that were rightfully mine, but the fruit was wild upon the vine. I shall take the hedge from all around. I shall break down the rock wall and trot it down. I'll not prune nor dig. I'll lay waste the ground. I'll put thistles and thorns into the mound. I'll command the clouds that no rain shall be found. For the house of Israel is the vineyard he loves, and Judah the unfruitful plant spoken of. Where he watches for justice, the just's blood is shed. When he looks for compliance, complaining is dead. So that was written about 10 years ago. And you see how strict my faith was. That's how I followed the church. That's how I went along. Each rule. And now we get to the next poem, though. Oh, dear. Bye now. The next poem is also a poem written after a scriptural passage, which is now Isaiah 29, but this was written very recently, and instead of following the text so exactly, you'll see how I bring in more of myself. And I use some of the images from Isaiah 29, but I really put it into my own terms. I draw in more of my pioneers, I draw in my own experiences. Upon arriving in Zion, I am the hungry one that dreameth. So long my thoughts have dwelt upon this place that they are part and parcel of my soul. My fate has led me to this sacred space. But woe to Ariel, the city where David dwelt. The sacrifice was all in vain, I found. tables. Cannot bear to be here without you. Your voice cries out into me from the dust. I read the words, they crumble, the blind one gropes. My heart is a storm, a whirlwind, a tempest. The flame of devouring fire consumes my hopes. I am the cast-off house of Jacob, hoping the book will be unsealed. And I'm longing, my love, to be redeemed, pacing these shaded streets with pain unhealed. Come to me, rise up and touch my hand in Zion. Be thou my Lord, my crown, my throne. Come to me, make my life a fruitful garden. Leave me not an area alone. That one represents my maturing faith. Now, in this conference, it seems like the panels I've gone to so far have shown real like satisfaction with the maturing faith of the recipient. They felt like that their maturing faith is a good thing, but I haven't seen a lot of that that element of like longing for a simpler time. We had to draw simple faith, and you know, I still feel that inside. I still wish that things were more, when I had this more dogmatic faith, things seemed to be so much easier. So I realize that my faith is ripened, but yet I still look back and kind of have this nostalgia for an earlier time. So this next poem is going to, Zion. Okay, but this one, Persephone and Eros, is going to show you how I long for a different, earlier time. Goddess queen of the underworld, I, whose sheaves of grain spring thickened to the sky. Imperial glances witheringly I wear, a crown of white narcissus in my hair. My name, a word the peasants fear to voice. Their doom in this dark world awaits my choice. My pure beginning is sweet. Scarce know if they, the fate that stole me here on a brightening day. For once, beside me, Eros lightly trod, the shining light of firstborn youth, the god. Driven by love, in fields of flowers we lay, and lyre and harp sweet symphonies did play. Here, thoughts of him can never be my balm. Pomegranate seeds clutched wetly in my palm. The next one is after a painting by Van Gogh. Van Gogh's work really sort of represents to me the angst I've felt about my changing and ripening faith. All of his paintings sort of just, I feel that from them. And so this poem I wrote when I was contemplating this particular picture one day. It's called Contemplation Upon the Starry Night. The swirls of stars and suns are circling in my breast, as fast upon my masterwork I gaze. And I have somehow captured my unrest upon the page. The twists and turns and torment life has tossed my way are echoed in the brush strokes and the oils. The tortured cedar bears my heart away, as do my toils. The cedar, dark and deep, is beckoning to me. Its branches in the foreground of my sight, I'd slide into the black and cease to be an endless night. But yet, the stars, the moon, they glare so awfully bright. The pain, they pulse their presence in my face, and all my family members pull me to the light with shining haste. The peace is fled. And all that's left for me to do is place my finger on the church's spire. Reclining so serene in hills of blue, it cools the fire. The sky so fierce and frightened, oh how large it looms. The steeple, though, connects the sky and ground. And in the valley, little lights and homes for friends are found. And the next set of poems, there's about four of them, they're pretty short, but they capture my recognition. condition of aging and growing older. I don't want to admit it, but somehow all the poems I've been writing lately have this as their theme. I don't mean to write that, but then when I finish them, I see that this is another poem about growing older. So I guess that's like what's really on my mind right now. But this one is a palindrome, and it's called Birthday Palindrome. Years. More candles and cake. These are bittersweet changes, seeing I'm growing older. Isn't that heart beating strong still? Still strong beating heart that isn't older. Growing, I'm seeing changes. Bittersweet are these cake and candles. More years. Here's my word for that I use instead of grandma. Second generation mother. This is my first grandchild.
That's such a wonderful
thing. I refuse to let you call me granny or even grandma, mamma, mims, or memes. For suddenly, your birth, I have a nanny. And several gray hairs, or so it seems. I refuse to get the grandma haircut, the one with tightly wound and close-cropped curls. I will not cease my running up the stairs, but I might be out of breath a bit, my girl. So don't go darting, daring behind sofas and other places I no longer fit. And don't go wooing me with eyes like saucers, as if I'd fall for you. Now just you quit. And put your little hand on my cheek. But don't say when I can't bear to have you speak. This one was written in an airport. I write poems in airports while I'm sitting there waiting. But they just come out. So this is the one I wrote about a year ago while sitting in an airport. And this is the picture I took while I was sitting there. My camera. I look for you each time I'm in an airport. Search each face as silent. I smile vaguely at each rude retort. I gaze in vain into each vacant eye. I up and down the moving stairs meander, my jingling bracelets ringing out a song, an empty one. As through the throngs I wander, you do not hear my passing. You are gone. For you have flown where none can follow freely. No longer do my own fleet wings unfurl. And I am old. And even when I'm kneeling in prayers into the still gray skies I hurl, I'm grounded in this terminal alone. Ne'er planes nor angel hosts can fly me home. This one was written when a friend of mine passed away. I wanted to talk about how it was freedom of his earthly body, but yet I still couldn't escape that melancholy. That was a rock to me, friend, a star in the lonesome sky, a comet so fleet and flashing, its essence while streaking by. All wreathed with hope and horror, we watched as the night drew nigh. Too bright you were to last, friend. You flamed and your light grew pale. I stretched forth my hand to stop you. I lifted in my voice to wail. But burning, you did continue. Behind you a smoking trail. In pyrotechnic blazing, we watch your exploding life. And now my eyes go hazy. My tears cut like a knife. With freedom dancing and dazing, you flee this earth. Now I've come to my final poem, and this one is fictional, but it still has so much of me in it. You can see my hesitation to grow older, and it's like growing older, but yet, if you read the gospel into it, you can also see how this reflects my maturing faith and my feelings towards my maturing faith. Silver Salud. When first we met, I danced on spikes of silver. I tossed about my locks of chestnut hair. And with one finger, lightly stirred my dream. When first we met, I treasured sun-swept days, was always ready with a sultry smile, and loved to touch the pen, converse, and think. Do not suppose at all I could not think. I sermonized with ease, my tongue was silver, I softened eruditeness with a smile, and twirled around my fingers wayward hair. I read a thousand authors in those days, with gusto all their words my mind did drink. When first we met, you licked my lips to drink their steamy sweetness. Now I think I never had such wanton, wondrous days. Everywhere you touched me sparkled silver. Your fingers tangled softly in my hair. I bared my neck and glowed a secret smile. The years went by. I met them with a smile while passing little hands their orange drinks and finger combing snarls from tangled hair. We went whole months and didn't even think or read or talk, but earning stocks in silver occupied your afternoons and days. Now, been more than 10,000 days since first we met. And now my faltering smile contains fine lines of sadness. See these silver tears which trickle down my cheeks when e'er I think of cancer and concoctions you must drink, and how you cling to life by just a hair. My mirror shows crow's feet and thinning hair. I now decline to celebrate birthdays, but I can be content. Because you think that I'm still beauty. Make me smile, and we'll hold hands across a frosty drink, while high above, the waning moon turns silver. Though I lament my hair has gone to silver, and there are dark days when I cannot think, yet toast I seasoned smiles into my drink.
Collection of habits is what I am. I have to admit, I thought I was more, but that's just a thought in the head. Instead, what I am really is a collection of habits is what I am. I have to admit, I thought I was more, but that's just a thought in the head. Instead, what I am really is not what I thought, but that's a thought too. In the head, anything can happen. even happiness, thinking without having to know that a collection of habits is what I am. I have to admit, I thought I was more, but that's just a thought in the head. Instead, what I am really is not what I thought, but that's a thought too. In the head, anything can happen, even happiness, thinking without having to know that for you to open on the table, the knife, cold, lid in my head, another thought worth having, even if for an instant, it is not what I thought, but that's a thought too. In the head, anything can happen, even happiness, thinking without having to know that for you to open on the table, the knife, cold, lit in my hand, another thought worth having, even if for an instant, it won't let you just say and see. Starts somewhere down deep in the pit of the stomach, or just about the solar plexus, called the mouth of the soul in the Sicilian language. It starts there, or at least that's where it begins to be noticeable. Then it moves here and there about the torso, maybe down the legs, or up again and round again the main cavity of the body, encircling the lungs, going through and spreading like foliage at fast speed, up the throat and down every which way, and up once more. And on second thought, it comes out the mouth, a word here, a word there, a sigh, a grunt, perhaps a groan, or on second thought, just before, silent and slow and secretive, too low and inaudible, until you're surprised later on, as if someone spoke and no one's around, not even you, who set the whole thing in motion. Carpenter's son, for my father. I'm not he. I'm not the one. I come to save nobody. I have a mother and a father just like you do. I'm no messenger. I have nothing to say. This cross I carry is my own. At my death, there'll be no storm. I'm the carpenter's son. I'm not the one you are waiting for. My mother was not a virgin. My father made chairs and coffins. I learned to make a shelf or two. I'm not he. I'm not the one. I can't walk on water. And when I eat fish, I have to watch out for bones. You're mistaken. I'm not he. I'm the carpenter's son. It's something like a keyhole. Only the key never exists, and the door is not about to open. It's something like a key itself. Only the hand never comes to pick it up, and again, the door is not about to open. It is something that leads one to the edge of a place on a page, and in the turning, the door is opened, and it's something like an entrance, only it is full of emptiness and impenetrable. Jesus magic. His mother asked him to get some wine. He didn't understand, so he turned water to wine. His friend asked him who he was? He didn't understand, so he said, I am. His disciples asked him how to feed the crowd. He didn't understand, so he let flow fish and loaves. Pilate asked him, what is truth? He didn't understand, so he spoke the silence. Oh, sweet Jesus, don't come back just yet. We don't understand and would only poke your wounds.
Learn humility.
living next to blasphemers, or the good learn humility. Living next to blasphemers, we're all gonna end up in the same place. We're all gonna end up in the same place. We're all gonna end up in the same place. And there's nothing we can do. The wicked learn kindness, frolicking with the virtuous. All the wicked learn kindness, frolicking with the virtuous. Oh, we're all gonna end up in the promised land. We're all gonna end up in the promised land. We're all gonna end up in the promised land. And heaven and hell turn to ghost towns.
Silver gems gleams above a shadow of deathly day.
Hair once black, then gray, now white, reflects the ethereal light of distant star. When desert's dark scent and foxtail blends in stone, is she alone there? No. This is her hour. Night blooming moonflower stands her turns her petals. Negative space. It's hard being warm and having nipples. Having hard nipples, knowing that they are there. Under clothing, under garments. One guy at ZCMI had the job, hard job, of sanding off every nipple of all the store's men. Mormon mind regards nipples as purely negative space, including male nipples. Poor Tarzans. Not so comic strip, but the hands of an airbrush censor at the dead's nose. Let the Jungle King nippleless, defenseless, and yes, strangely emasculated. During the mixed up 60s, in the church newspapers, nervously neutered funnies. Smoking. I do not walk. I do not tweet. Need I explain I question the preeminence of cool and am cynical enough to fear that rock star may not represent the pinnacle of all that we hold dear and could fall several notches down the food chain since it doesn't take a brain to or self-identify as butthole assertors. And by the way, among those things that are not rocket science, I ponder what it means to kiss. Simple calculus of oscillation, heat plus bliss, is that what von Braun felt when his first missile melted? May have turned him on, but left Polish cold. Should you be sold on Mariner as romantic hero once he moved to the U.S. and enlightened and engineered the Saturn V that sent us to the moon? All I ask is, please resist the thought. Kiss his ass and call him smoking. Demons in minnows. Elegant old high priest. Silver hair parted in the middle, trimmed mustache, tickles the ivories in priesthood. This morning, piano solo played with verb and a delicate intensity actually follows the hymn book's musical instruction fervently. Wow, I said inside my head. How long has it been since anyone's played or sang Master of the Tempest is Raging in church? Chunky, curly-haired, and vociferous Logan 5th 18th Ward Chorister Harold Peterson used to tear into that old Protestant hymn in Sunday school song practice. Yeah, we actually used to practice singing in the Mormon church. Hard to believe, I know. And when we didn't sing it right, he made us sing it over again, gasping for breath, because he always pushed the tempo. Peterson would add an extra syllable here and there. Master of the tempest is raging, and the billows are tossing high. The skies are shadowed with darkness, no shelter or help is nigh. Ah, who cares then, not that we perish? How can so pious leave out? When each moment is madly is threatening, a grave in the angry deep. When I think of Peterson now, it seems his voice was a mixture of Tom Waits and Jesus. The winds and the waves are, and the winds and the waves shall obey, and I will peace be still. Whether the wrath of the storm tossy or a demon, whatever it meant or whatever it be, my ears as a child heard that line differently, I believe, than anyone else in the congregation, maybe because of the way Peterson puffed it out through his nose like he was drowning, or maybe because I had an imagination. Whether the wrath of the storm tossy, or demons or men, whatever it be, no matter what water can swallow the ship where lies the master of ocean and earth and skies, and all shall sweetly obey thy will. Peace be still. So I skipped the line that was the crucial one. All right, mispronounced it. Demons or minnows, whatever it be, they all shall sweetly obey my will. Peace, peace, peace. Odd. Still haunts me, that song. About a sleepy god, black sky, angry sea, demons and minnows, whatever it be. Please, if you will, sing it fast and fervently, and when it's done, peace.
Summons. called to hold the keys of mysteries, yet both at 34 were locked away. Joseph, jailed for liberty, dropped through a hole in prison floor into the pit. In Birmingham, Martin declared, where there is injustice, I am there, and it would not be fair of me to spurn the call to aid, for aid, to preach the gospel, the freedom gospel, just as Paul was not afraid to leave the town of Tarsus and in cells throughout the Roman Empire tell of Christ. Jailers for these eccentric visionaries were curious. Guards made mock of Joseph, withdrew in shock and fear when he rebuked them. Martin's keepers, peering through the bars, were moved by prayers, songs, words of praise, raised by men in chains. History's remains, the letters. From liberty, name-framed in irony, Joseph rose. Circumstance calculated to awaken our spirits to sacred remembrance. Nothing can separate us from love of God and fellowship one with another. Every cruelty practiced on us or on a brother will only bind our hearts together. From Alabama, Martin Penn. We are caught in mutuality and by a garment of destiny to purge their peoples, robbers and assassins came. When you see them lynch your mothers, drown your sisters, brothers, hate-filled policemen, you may understand it's hard for us to wait, read Martin's missive. At 39, they both forget. Joseph gone to Carthage, calm as summer's morning, Martin to the mountaintop, then to Memphis for the kill. I want to do God's will, he said. I don't fear any man. I've seen the glory of the Lord, and so did Joseph. In sleep. Yes, she slept. But did she sleep with him? She says she banged him, bawled him, overhauled his engine of desire and held his ankles to the flame. But did she sleep with him? Put out the fire, let go of consciousness, keep vigil with the dead. I think she left him alive. Corpse wrapped in his bedclothes, blank face turned toward the wall. In some dank cafe, she drank coffee, smoked a cigarette until it burned her fingers, waited for the red of dawn, and now she's gone. In my bed, I would have slept with her, enfolded her in gown of night, and held her body in the dream that broken open in the light would split the scene of shadow. That animus we yearn for is not the act or acts of love. The space is endpoint. In sleep, in dream, in rude exchange of breath, in secret turnings in the night is found deep. The after party. Will there be laughter? Will there be enemy? Will there be those who couldn't come and others who may make merry in another room? That we're not allowed to see. Dream that in the stream of light from overhead, wash of fleeting faces, of lost friends long dead, sweeps past me, smiles veiled in ambiguity. True, the party invitations read, come as you are, but do the celebrants arrayed in formal dress feel more or less deserving than those of us who wore our nightclothes or frayed jeans? Beneath the guard, a rosy aura, what does it mean? Pinch myself, dull glow of essence, a sense I have become less dense. Essentially, however, I'm still here. But where is here? Hors d'oeuvres and drinks are served. Watch as partygoers raise and clink their glasses. I shrink from this formality as from all public ceremony. Only now does it occur to me I am alone. The others, accumulating groups, women on the arms of men, otherworldly light that accentuates soft creases in their flowing gowns, and yes, the female form. Mirage or gift of setting sight. Night is thick outside the pane on the veranda. Attracted by the dark, I drift to where mist sifts over me. A park or stand of trees beyond the gate insinuates some deeper mystery. Is it latent curiosity that attempts to leave the comfort of conviviality? Approach the grove on cool, damp ground. Aroma from the trees is camphor. Briefly turning back, glimpse of burning, hear the fading sound of faint music. Blindly, though, I choose to lose myself in captive shades of camouflage. Enigma draws me in, time slows. Who is she? The keeper of this wood? Breathless stillness, frozen in a shaft of moonlight. Tawny, spotted, doe-eyed creature stares at me. I will, this vision, persevere hereafter. Coulter at the dentist's. Hooked up with Ann Coulter at the dentist's. Just as if she belonged there, was seated in the waiting room, skinny shanks crossed, her fine feral feet looking menacing in the pointy black and shiny queen-size pumps. A masochist might fetishize. Despite blonde mane and longish legs, Coulter isn't coltish, yet notice something equine in her autocratic nose. By the length of it, could have faced down Joan McCarthy in the propaganda derby's third race at Pimlico. Wrong-headed, of course, but she still bets revisionist historians will absolve that long-beaten, long-dead dark horse. So, when the hygienist ushers me back to clean my teeth, I take Anne with me. I can do that since it's from the cover of a magazine, she stares at me. My perverse insurance, should I require distraction from periodontal disease or plaque, I can squeeze in a caustic Coulter crack between scrape and swish and polish. I have to say, Anne says, I'm all for public flogging. She doesn't dog it at the dentist's. The photo makes it clear. Whoppers told through pearly, professionally whitened chuckers are delivered with the acidic smile of an angel of destruction, meant to revile the liberal plague. give Kohler credit. Not even her inanities are vague. Invade their countries, kill their leaders, convert them to Christianity, she says, while my hygienist has the touch to make me smile. Please understand, despite the ruse of stylish, wicked shoes, I get no kick from him. Nature of the beast. The natural man, God's fool, Paul said. By nature, man, referring Genesis, finessed, misled by woman, devolved to stature lower than the angels. Once fallen, perfect body, conscious of desire, mind perceived it flawed and sinful, covered with skin's mammals, but modesty did not put out the fire. The natural woman, shame was not innate in her, refused to hearken to dictates of her mate or blame the serpent. For her, felt natural in the lovely dark and sensuous pelts of beasts. Evicted from the garden, found she could regard the stark and wild as beautiful. Embraced the earth, the sky, and childbirth. The animal, shy and fierce, drinks from instinct. No need to think or reason. Natural man envies creatures' freedom, yet denies the link. Here's exultant pride, grandeur, new thrill of innocence and fear, pierce the wilderness. Afraid to die, irony like blood seeps through. Man works his will to hunt and kill. The word so long deferred by natural man, now blurred. Woman heard the whisper, ate the fruit, discerned light from dark, bent the arc of patriarchy. Wisdom or duty, natural or unnatural, anomalies of nature, wine and lamb, man and man, choose to lie down together, news the nature of the beast. No balm in Gilead for Carol Gallagher. Norma's story. You could see a big pink cloud come over, and you could taste it. Metallic, something awful, like artificial salt. See that cloud, pink, red, go over the top of this house. We were expendable, a whole bunch of us. When the breeze wasn't right and it was going into Vegas or LA, they postponed it. But the people in Mesquite got it. In Cedar City, we got it. Got it back. They said it wasn't radiation. High power boys in the Pentagon wanted to make a name for themselves. Lord gave me a voice. Say what I think. Think that what they did to us was terrible. Kept coming back to say to us, hell, you guys are crazy. Robert's story. Light, then the heat. I could feel the heat at the point of detonation, like something running a hot iron over the whole of my body. Could see the bones in my elbow, looking with my eyes shut. Crystal clear day in the desert. Now all you could see was fire. Don't know how long we stood there sobbing and weeping. Every single guy, no shame at all. We looked out at ground zero, vast dish with fumes and smoke rising out of it. Green, black, purple fused into one big solid bowl. Nobody ever explains why they do what they do. Why not take those who are interested into the desert, put them in a hole in the ground? If they like to play with this shit, give them a shot at it. First-hand experience. None of this sheltered stuff with bunkers where they know for sure their asses are safe. Very few people know that this kind of stuff went on. It's too unreal. Can't talk about it. 6 feet of intestine removed, colostomy, eviscerated at 30, fibroid the size of an orange. I mean, Jesus, it's dangerous in the machine, in the Marine Corps. Threat is the motivation. Don't say anything about this to anyone at any time. Our story. Couldn't happen in America. Must have been a dream. We made these bombs for the Japanese. Atomic veterans? Look, please shut up about that. You're remembering some B-movie from the 50s. We made those bombs so we wouldn't have to fight another war. Get rid of all those photographs. Those faces make me sick. Mass hallucination, that's what it was. You see, you say the AEC came into your house, rifled your husband's desk, burned your IRS returns. Well, hell, you ever heard of national security? We're a low-use segment of the population. Says Joe, that I am dead. Dreamed I saw Joe. Well, maybe not him exactly, but that image on that 12 by 15 foot mural by Mary Lathrop, painted on the wall of the first Hill House on the post office place, back in the 60s, even eyes blindfolded, face mask of impeccability, seated, straight back chair, confronts the firing squad, while Son of God, nailed to a cross, hangs between them in the air. Odd picture. Fixture of that downtown slum. But IWW wouldn't print it with Jesus in it. Catholic press killed it too. Didn't care to mess with the lives of Joe Hill. Catholics, Mormons, merchants failed to guess Hill's modern proxy. Sequestered in their midst, anarchists, pacifists, freelance Christ disciple, Catholic too, Amy Henson, wore out his shoes, beating pavement for the poor, scoring lumber out of alleys, feeding tramps and transients on city streets, around the corner, picketed the post office, courthouse, opposing Vietnam. Roughnecks put the arm on him. Tried to put him down, but failed to slam him. Couldn't fathom something in his eye. Call it freedom. Call it lack of fear. Soon enough, downtown had its fill of fantasy. And Hill House sent the refuge packing. Twice, minus Mary's mural, first to 1100 South, 100 West, then near the Vitro smokestack and the tracks, the NRG, voices from the past, Utah Phillips, Murphy, Cajun, Dowie, long-haired preachers, banks of marble, the rebel girl, dreamed I saw Joe Hill, the liveliest human. Okay, this is the last part of the movie. This is to Mr. Wasserman, whose first name I can't read. He is the painter that I took this poem from. His painting, and my poem is titled Bedroom Painting, number 7. I think I'll go directly to the visual. Naming the organic growths in the bedroom garden, she called the waxy sexual parts stamen and pistil. Uneven rows of pink protuberances with red neon faces. Toes. Orange sphere with pop-out navel. Astutely, she named fruit. Framed painting with wall blue, which she called scum. Spread a sheet of leopard skin, lay her thigh upon it, and call it meat. Thank you.
These were done over a period of about 10 years.
told me something.
Did you feel them growing out of you?
What?
Yeah, do you feel them growing out of you?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like your maturity.
You know, there's the idea of the word made flesh. The flesh makes words.
Yeah, that was.
You know what I mean? It's kind of a. For me, the body is not this this vehicle for the soul, and then death comes, and the soul leaves, and the body goes rot, and all this. You know, I don't really buy that anymore. I haven't bought that since. 8 years old.
So what did you invent?
Well, I didn't invent it. It's a very old belief, an old religion, that the body is an eternal element, you know, and that it propagates and it makes everything. Everything is basically the body, the mind, or the senses. You know, the senses that, see, there's a difference between seeing through your eyes and seeing with your eyes. I never really see with my eyes. I see through my eyes. So my eyes have never really, they'll never lie to me.
You're going to be able to see when you're blind.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I don't have to see with my eyes. Exactly. That's the thing. And you're going to be able to see when you no longer have a body.
I know, isn't that?
See. Well, or hear the same thing with all the senses, that the body is everything and nothing at the same time. Well, it's not just realistic kind of thinking.
It's true.
You know?
This is it.
Yeah, it's all it. It's all it.
I was going to ask if it
is. So, Doc Watson, born blind, could electrically wire his house, could play the guitar, alarming, can't come up with a word to describe it, and
virtuosity.
Virtuosity will do indeed. So do you know Watson's work?
I've heard it. Didn't he play a dobro?
He plays everything. He plays banjo, he plays fiddle, he plays harmonica.
And he could have done as well if he was deaf.
Probably so. He creates a world out of without having seen. So that's pretty amazing. And there's all the tradition of blind musicians that are amazing musicians. Yeah. So I wonder
about the feeling of conversion. When you're climbing the steps.
Oh, I love that.
It was a good one to begin with.
Mm-hmm. And the shape of the seat. That's what's a really nice way to start the background, because that's what I like to see as well as you. And I thought, the spring of your youth, you know, we're going to see how most of that being younger.
The look on the face of
the missionary picture?
No, of your
my baby.
The face of your baby is, I mean, that look takes in everything.
Would you put it back on?
She caught her eye at the amazingness of the world and has this wise smile.
Doesn't she?
Oh, man. And I think it's got to do partially with who she's cheap with.
I'll tell you, it's...
Oh, brother, here we go. Okay, let me tell you. That little expression. And then the missionary one, would you put that one?
Hang on just a second. It's because I can't get it, but it's because her mom, the baby's mom, was taking a picture. My daughter.
Oh, so she was looking at her.
So she's looking at
her
mom.
Oh, okay, that's good.
So these were all about her maturity through life. And the first one she ever wrote, which was in high school, and the mission poems. And this mission poem. Would you also please
Yeah.
Now, just a moment. That isn't you, is it?
No, that's not. Okay. I should promise.
But the final poem is not your final poem.
Would you put that in the screen so we can see? I did have an experience, though, with the way you are, so there's something that I would use to sit there. The comparison. You're so female.
Oh, yeah. They're
so
female.
So female.
Hallelujah.
And you have the right, you have the left, and you have the out there.
That's
right. You went out through the center into the cosmos.
Well, and bringing the two together.
But I'm saying, but you were the pillars for that. And I could say yin yang.
Yeah. With Alex's wood prints, with growing out of the body, the sounds growing out of the body, it was interesting to almost home chant through some of the prose, so that it was almost meditative. I could offer.
I did one of the presentation where I did the nine images with the only chanting.
Oh, I like that. I'd also like a huge.
Do you? Are you selling your book here?
What?
Are you selling a book with these poems here?
Are you sure it's in there in the book room? Because signature.
There's an old. There's a couple of. We made mine is out of print.
Well, that means you actually sold.
But Ken Sanders
because I sold all.
Well, there you go.
Ken doesn't have anything in here.
What?
Ken Sanders doesn't.
Yeah.
He has some.
As a matter of fact, I saw some remainder, about four copies of the previous book that I had done, signature.
But talk about your new book.
Oh, the new book is in October. And one of these pictures is the cover.
Oh, nice.
One of these, I think that one. That will be on the cover.
Beautiful.
And there's four what I call text artworks within the body itself, including the one of them is the last piece that the flowers are amazing. Mm-hmm. And that will be one of the four inside.
Are you familiar with kind of humorous poet artist by the name of Ashley Grodin. Some of the other things he did, postcards. He started off doing postcards of things of very interesting sayings. You think of it. It reminds me just a bit.
Well, this has a long history. This is a long, long history. This kind of text, visual, interplay.
That's a great thought. I do have to say, Alex, what your work does for me, it is a wonderful thing for me because somehow you step me back into myself and I can go up a few notches. In the same myself way, because I loved you standing so naked, and I thought of joining somewhere that gave me permission to join.
You did put you right down into
the room. The chant that I do there about my mind and my woman's mind and my man's mind.
It's very meditative.
Taking possession of it, never mind. And playing with all that meaning is part of an integration process that this is what every one of us tries to do in a lifetime. It's not an event, right? It's integration, it's a process of trying to kind of put it together. You know, these things that we're taught by society, these dualistic ways of thinking, whether it be between man and woman, mind and body, you know what I mean? The individual and society.
Form,
all
form.
These things that are set up, you know, as dualities, when they're really dichotomies. You know, dichotomies meaning that they're very different. You don't deny the difference between a man and a woman. You just say that they're not dual. You see, they coexist rather than one trying to exist at the expense of the other.
Well, that has been a very long battle on Earth.
Yeah, you know, please.
Might be the oldest battle.
It is the oldest battle between matriarchy and patriarchy. You know, matriarchy is not an ideal situation. Matriarchy is pretty oppressive.
That's why,
I come from a patriarchal society.
That's why we love this whole concept of balance and equality.
Exactly.
I mean, we have this,
you know, so it's not
idealistic perspective. Once we can actually commit and connect, it's going to be far better than any of us ever knew.
I'll look at that, and I believe it.
I have to leave, so I just wanted to say one thing about Paul's, and that is that your ironic limbing and describing so many of the commonplace allows me to see things in a bigger perspective and actually enjoy some of the things that have become routine, or some of the things that you kind of take for granted out of habit and things, but to see through fresh eyes with a little irony and a little humor.
Dentist, right?
Yes.
You go into a dentist, not a big deal, right?
Right.
And then all of a sudden, there's a cue, there's a trigger, and you're into this other kind of thing. Yeah.
But Ann Holton was perfect for the dentist with those pointy shoes.
Well,
and he goes right into your nerve.
Well, that was quite amazing.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for staying.